Well, thank you, Pam, for reading the passage for us. Those of course of you who went to the Open Air Theatre this last week, I gather on Brownsea Island, I gathered it was Romeo and Juliet, and of course the famous words that Juliet speaks, parting, she says, is such sweet sorrow. And she says that to Romeo, and she says it's sweet, of course, because she's imagining that they're going to meet again. And it's going to be great. Perhaps if she knew how the play ended, she might not have said sweet. It's often sorrowful partings, aren't they? My wife got she has a Zoom group, a couple of old friends that she mentors in piano teaching. And their last Zoom meeting a couple of months ago, this friend was really very, very upset because her daughter had just announced that she and her husband were parting. She says she just wasn't happy. And for Kerry's friend, this was devastating because they love their son-in-law. Parting in relationships, common and often sorrowful. And of course, it doesn't just happen in families, does it? Businesses, departments, you know, a feud can develop in a department sometimes between senior colleagues, and the whole department is dysfunctional. It can happen in churches, can't it? Churches can split. Peter talked the other week about the split between Paul and Barnabas in Acts. I'm preaching next month at Canford Heath, and the passage they've given me is in Philippians, and I was reading the Philippians, and I was reading a bit around it, and there are two strong women in the church at Philippi, Euodia and Syntyche, and they're feuding. It's causing division in the church. They're feuding. And in fact, I read that in every single one of the 21 letters in the New Testament, there's something about personal relationships that are going wrong that Paul and others speak about. So parting and these things are common and they're serious. And tonight we're just looking at the way Abram and Lot handled that situation. So as we do, let's just pray. Father, we pray as we study this passage this evening that our faith and our love for you will be strengthened. And we ask this for your name's sake. Amen. Well, I thought I'd just go through the background. So if I could have my first slide, please, Phil. Great. I just wanted to just remind you of the family history. Abraham had two brothers, and his dad, unfortunately, was called Terah, and he was a right terror. Actually, they lived in a place called Ur of the Chaldeans, and his brother Haran died. Haran had a son called Lot, who we've heard about quite a lot already. Now, Terah decided they'd move to Canaan, and in fact, they only got as far as a place called Haran. And when we come to chapter 12, we find that Abram gets a specific call. He's the only one in the family who gets that call, and it's a call to leave his family and leave that community and follow where God tells him to go. In fact, the call is a wee bit thin on detail. God tells him to go to a land that he will show him. And as that verse on the slide in Hebrews says, in fact, Abraham went to a place even though he didn't know where he was going. God told him to go. Abraham didn't even know where he was to go. So he set off to Canaan, which is where his father intended to take them. And it's only when he got there that God revealed to him that not only is this the land I'm going to show you, God says to him, actually, you know, this is the land I'm going to give you. and I'm going to give it to you and your descendants. In fact, Abraham, I'm going to make a great nation, and your name will be great. All the people of the earth will be blessed through you. Abraham doesn't appear to know how this is going to happen. We're told in chapter 11 that his wife Sarah was unable to conceive. We know that he took Lot with him. We don't know whether he asked Lot to go or Lot asked to go. We're not told. My only thought is, well, maybe Abraham thought perhaps God's going to fulfill his promises of all these descendants through Lot, because Sarah is barren. Why was Abram called to leave? Well, in the book of Joshua, we're told that Joshua said to the people, "The Lord, the God of Israel, says, long ago your ancestors, including Terah, the father of Abraham, lived beyond the Euphrates and worshipped other gods." So I took Abram, says the Lord, from that land beyond the Euphrates and brought him to Canaan. God took Abram out of that place, that family, and that territory that didn't worship him, that worshipped other gods. In fact, according to Jewish tradition, I gather, Abram's father traded in idols. That was Abram's early home life, and God took him out of that place where they worshipped the moon, because God wanted Abraham to worship just him. So when he arrives in Canaan, yes, God reveals to him, "You're in the right place. I'm going to give you this land. I'm going to give you this land." And so Abram travels from north to south. And as Peter told us last week, he goes off to Egypt when there's a famine. And then there's a whole lot of trouble there. But the upshot was they're expelled from Egypt, and he comes back to Canaan with more livestock and more servants than when they entered. And so we read in our chapter tonight in verse 2, Abraham became very wealthy, and Lot was with him throughout. And he, verse 5, also had considerable possessions. Now, what are we talking about here? Well, actually, if you look at the next chapter, chapter 14, when Abraham has to raise an army, he has 318 trained men born in his household. 318. And you remember, Lot would have had a load of people as well. There were hundreds of people here on the move. This wasn't two little families. This was a lot of people and a lot of livestock and a lot of Lot. So it's a big thing. And there wasn't a lot of land, so there was a problem. There was a problem. Basically, this land ain't big enough for the both of us, is what Abram said to Lot. And they were at loggerheads. It's funny, isn't it, how they would become very wealthy, and wealth had divided them, divided their families, divided their servants, divided their staff. Pasture, as we saw, was at a premium on those Bur hills. Apart from that, also, as the film said, you know, we are kindred, said Abraham. They were living in the land of the Canaanites and the Perizzites. Abraham obviously didn't want a scene amongst these foreign people, foreign to them. We are kindred, he says. So they've got a problem. And the solution in verses 8 to 9 was separation. This was Abram's suggestion. Doesn't seem as if he gave Lot any choice about separating, but he lets Lot choose where he goes. As we saw, and as Pam read, Lot took full advantage, and quite predictably, he chose the most fertile bit of land down by the River Jordan. He was attracted, wasn't he, probably by that prosperous farming land. He'd probably seen that when they were in Egypt, all that lovely, prosperous, fertile land on the River Nile. That's what he'd seen. He'd witnessed the good life. He'd be a fool, wouldn't he, to choose anywhere else. As for Abram, well, once he'd separated from God, as we saw on that sketch, God reassured him, Abraham, all of this land that you can see will be yours. In the long run, Abraham couldn't stop God from giving him what he'd promised him. And Abram is told to walk the length and breadth of the land, and the chapter closes with him in Hebron in the south, where he builds an altar for the Lord. So how do we analyze what's happened in the story? I just want to, five things I thought about as I was reading this story. If I could have the second slide, please, Phil. Five things that I noticed. Firstly, there was open discussion. Secondly, there's no blame attached in this passage. Thirdly, separation was expedient. Fourthly, there were hard choices involved. And finally, there were no backward steps. So let's just think about those things. Firstly, there was open discussion. There was no burying of the problem. There was an obvious problem. This land was not big enough for the both of us. It was a problem that wasn't going to go away, was it? In fact, it was going to get worse rather than better. They were going to get more and more people. They were going to grow in their wealth. Things were only going to get worse. There was no point procrastinating about it. Important, isn't it, that they had that open discussion? Important in all our relationships. Some of you may have done the marriage course. I didn't, but I have seen the videos. And one of the things that comes across there is communication, critical. Seeing the other person's point of view, critical. It applies in all disputes, doesn't it? And disputes are often solved when one sees the other person's point of view. So there was an open discussion of the issue. But secondly, no blame culture. The Bible narrative doesn't raise Abram on a pedestal and portray Lot as a villain or as a victim. Yes, Lot trails in Abram's shadow, but he's loyal to Abram throughout all of Abram's travels, as Abram is to him. Lot was willing to follow in that life of separation. And I'm always struck, you know, when you read about Lot in the New Testament, in 2 Peter, how is Lot described? He's called righteous Lot. Righteous Lot. Not that everything Lot did was righteous, of course not. But that's how he's summed up. But what would, I think, be fair to say is that Lot was an obstacle. He was an obstacle to God's plan, not because he was a villain, but because he competes with Abram for the land that Abram had been promised. Now, of course, we might still think a little bit about Lot's choices. Did he make a selfish choice? I mean, obviously, there were practical reasons for the separation. And I think we would all applaud Abram for putting the choice even-handedly before Lot. He probably knew which way Lot would choose, didn't he? You can argue Lot should have perhaps been more generous to the older man. Perhaps he should have given him the nicer bit. But then he also had to consider his own men, all these people that he, all those who were dependent upon him, not just his family, but his staff, his servants, his herdsmen, and so on. What do you do when there's a conflict of interest between your own men and your own workers and someone else's? I found that quite a difficult thing when I was working in the hospital I worked in Liverpool. When the resources are scarce, what do you do? Do you fight for your own department, for money for your own department? What about the trust as a whole and how that's doing? How do we balance that up? It's not easy. What would you do if you'd have been Lot? What would I have done? What choice would we have made? Well, did Lot make a selfish choice? Did he make a wise choice? It's interesting, isn't it? He looked around, he saw, and he set out towards the east. John Walton, in his commentary on Genesis, says this: every movement away from God so far in Genesis has been towards the east. Interesting. What looks good may not necessarily be good. And that's the problem. Did he foolishly run into temptation by going near Sodom? Did he know what Sodom was like? We're told it was a wicked city in verse 13. Did Abram know what Sodom was like? Should Abram have said and warned Lot if he did? Or perhaps he should have given him a restricted choice. Don't go to the south, stay north. But in the end, Lot didn't make a wise choice. In the end, he ended up living in that city built by man. And we read again in that chapter in Hebrews, Abraham described as looking for a city with foundations whose architect and builder is God. Abraham walked by faith and Lot by sight. Thirdly, separation might be the expedient thing to do. I've said here that there was no point burying the problem. It wasn't going to go away. And in this case, the separation was amicable. It was fair. Abraham gave Lot the choice, and Lot made his choice. I was thinking we might wish that in Palestine today, with competing factions, a similar solution could be reached. Lot, I say, was an obstacle to God's plan. He wasn't an obstacle to Abraham serving God. He was an obstacle to Abraham receiving the blessing that God had promised him. Abraham didn't know Lot was an obstacle. There was no clue in the passage to say that he should have known that Lot was an obstacle. Lot wasn't driven from the land. God removed, in his sovereignty, Lot from that land. And if we actually look, if I could have the next slide, if we actually look at what happened to the land, and we go again to the book of Joshua, and we see how that land was divided. I don't know whether you can follow that on the map, but down the bottom by the Red Sea is the place called Moab, or where the Moabites lived. It's down there is probably where the site of Sodom and Gomorrah. It's down there that Lot went with his business and his family. So he went outside, actually, the land of Canaan that God promised Abraham. Lot, as the obstacle to God's promise, was completely removed. It's a good thing to pray, isn't it, for obstacles to be removed. I remember Nick praying here in June, I think, about the... the industrial pay disputes in the country, and he prayed obstacles would be removed. Good prayer to pray, and God will remove obstacles in his time. And then choice. There's going to be hard choices. Abram was used to hard choices. God didn't ask Abram to give up anything he wasn't going to replace. No. But he did have a hard choice here. Abraham had every right as the senior partner in the business. He had every right to choose what to do. But he gave Lot the choice. Abraham could have seized the land that he wanted. He had every right to do that. Or he could have submitted. He chose to submit. Must have been a difficult decision. And there are times, aren't there, when God asks us to seize the opportunity. And there are other times when God asks us to submit. Each situation has to be considered carefully. In this case, the separation was peaceful, probably as a result of Abram's submission. And the fifth thing that I'd comment upon about this dispute and the way it was settled is that there were no backward steps. In her commentary, Joyce Bowles Baldwin wrote this: "The question arises as to whether Abram should have permitted Lot to go with him in the first place." And I thought about that, and I thought, well, actually, you know, we don't know who asked who. Did Lot ask to go with Abram? Did Abram ask Lot? We don't know. I think I agree with John Walton. He said, no, there's no suggestion that Abram was disobedient when he brought Lot with him. I'd also say there's no suggestion that Abram wallowed in regret that he took Lot. Abram learnt lessons from the past, the greatest being, of course, that God keeps his promises. Abram learnt those lessons, and he may well have been sad. Parting is sorrow often. He may well have been sad that this happened, that there was this split in the family. But once it had happened, he went forward. God, in fact, told him, look, Abram, go up and down the land. Take this land, for I am giving it to you. Mark it out. It's your land, and I'm giving it to you. No backward glances. Lot, you may remember, was guilty later on, or his wife, of backward glances. So let's close by leaving Abraham at Hebron in worship. He had a habit of building altars, built one near Bethel in verse 3, and then near Hebron in verse 18. And the altars, there's no mention here that God asked him to have any sacrifices or anything like that on these altars. At this stage, all God does is make Abram an offer. God makes Abraham an offer. And Abram responds with faith. He walked by faith. He waited for what God had promised. And as a result, God, in his faithfulness, delivered that land to Abraham. And obstacles to God's way and God's will were removed by God in God's time. Let's be quiet for a moment as we ponder this passage. God works out his plan. Often, like Abram, it's a bit at a time we get glimpses of how God is going to achieve it. Abraham learnt of God's plan in dribs and drabs, but God will achieve it. Even if we create obstacles or don't see the obstacles, he will remove them. Lord, help us in the difficult decisions and choices that we have to make in life, especially when it comes to personal relationships. Help us, Lord, to learn your principles, to apply them, and Lord, help us to be patient, to walk by faith, for we know that you are faithful, and all you have promised, you will deliver. Thanks be to God.